from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who could really relate to Tony when he was in the spy bunker. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast here. And we're going to be talking about what a week in Survivor here, where we're talking about how it was two queens of Survivor in 1 week, where Parvati Shallow and Sandra Diaz-Twine got voted out. We're going to talk with two great guests today, one of whom has played with both of these players. The other is the great John Cody. Candace Cody and John Cody here to recap everything that's going on this week, and looking forward to catching up with them. Of course, we had a great Survivor Know-It-Alls last night. If you missed any of that, you're going to want to make sure that you catch that discussion. And everybody was really just so excited about last night's Survivor, and had a very fun discussion talking about that. We got a lot more still coming up this weekend. Trish Hegarty is going to be our guest on the Feedback Show. Make sure you get feedback questions in by Saturday afternoon at robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282 RHAP for that. And then, of course, we got the This Week in Survivor plus the Wiggle Room coming up this weekend as well. Before we get to John and Candace, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Dunkin'. Take a sip on the bright side with the new Dunkin' Matcha Latte. Try the refreshing combination of sweetened matcha green tea blended with creamy milk, and you can enjoy it iced, hot, or frozen. It's a delicious way to hit the reset button on your day, and it's also just a delicious way to drink something delicious. Dunkin' Donuts, you can go up to the drive-thru. They've got all sorts of great coffee for those of us who are still working hard right now. It's a delicious way to drink something delicious. Enjoy a refreshing matcha latte at Dunkin' today. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to bring our guests in. Normally, when I have people on the podcast, I haven't spoken to them in a little bit of time, but I actually just talked to our Survivor recap guests on Sunday night as part of the COVID-19 roundtable that we did, trying to get people all the best information that we have and answering a bunch of questions. And so I'm very glad that we're able to catch up again with Dr. Candace and John Cody. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Good, good. Happy that we're able to be able to catch you guys. John, how are you?
Doing great, Rob. Great to be on the podcast talking about something other than pandemic illness.
Yes. Okay. Well, that is a nice distraction from everything that's going on. Of course, that if you wanted to hear that roundtable with Dr. Mike, you can, of course, hear that if you go to robhasawebsite.com. It's in the podcast feed. It's up on the YouTube channel, and lots of great information there. And Candace, anything else that you want to pass along for that you might have learned in the last couple of days?
Oh gosh. Since the podcast, there has been more data coming out, more strongly recommending against the use of NSAIDs. So that's ibuprofen, Advil, those types of medications. So, I think they're actually recommending not to prescribe those medicines. And if you are taking them, choose to take something else, especially as a fever reducer. You should take acetaminophen or Tylenol.
Okay.
And then one more thing about fever. There's some data saying that not all patients, in fact, almost half the patients only had a temperature of 99.5 as their presenting temperature. So 100.4 is the normal quote unquote medical fever, but a lot of people had really more of a low grade fever, 99.5. So that's just some more literature. But again, nothing else has really changed from recommendations, just more sort of government-induced social distancing measures.
Okay.
Well, and one last thing is that, now they're getting some numbers out saying that there's a higher proportion of young people being hospitalized in the United States than in these other countries. So the guidelines that you're hearing coming out saying you'll be okay if you're young may not be true for our population. And we don't know why yet, but you know, the young people aren't necessarily completely out of the woods.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody within the sound of this podcast that listen to, please, we're begging you, please listen to all of the social distancing guidelines. And if you're supposed to be in your house, you're not on your way to work or the supermarket, please stay home right now. We're making these podcasts for you to listen to. Okay.
That's right. We're here for your entertainment.
Okay. And we had a very entertaining episode of Survivor this week. And Candace, this was great timing to talk to you because we got to see not one, but two of your former tribe mates voted out in one episode this week.
I know. This was a dagger to my heart this week. It was tough. It's like you planned it this way, Rob.
No, we that you know how much we had to go back and forth to schedule to
get the yes. I'm kidding.
No, because then people that get these people that are like, oh, you knew. I didn't know. I don't know.
The conspiracy lives on.
Yes. Okay. So
I'm totally kidding. I didn't know that. Sorry.
No. Anyway, but I guess we have to start with the really historic tribal council that we saw from the show on Wednesday night, where Sandra got voted out, who you played with on Heroes versus Villains. What was your reactions to seeing what happened to Sandra?
It was a great move. It was a great move by Denise. I was very impressed. But I have to say, just in general, during this season, I feel like you've got these big players that are really big targets, and all of these tribe swaps and making the tribes smaller, where there's really nowhere to hide and really no options for these people who are the huge targets, to really go anywhere and make moves. I mean, obviously there's options to make moves and do things, but I just feel like there's really not anywhere to hide for them on these small tribes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, life is definitely not fair. Survivor's even less fair, but when you think about what happened, you know, these, you catch some indication of it. Tyson sort of spoke about it before he was voted off, about, you know, the players who played one time kind of banding together. There's more of them, and the players that have played multiple times being, you know, in the crosshairs. And you know, so he talked about it. And then once they broke up into three tribes, it's, you know, you look what happened. It was Rob, Sandra, Harvey. I mean, all of these, you know, the big players who've been on the show multiple times and have lots of connections. The other one-time players are just, they're concerned, and whether they're doing it intentionally that way or not, it's how it's definitely shaken out. And so during tribal council, it was interesting because there, you know, Denise highlighted the fact that, by the way, I love Denise. She's one of my favorite players ever. And, she highlighted the fact that, everyone out here is a threat for different reasons. And it's true. You can't win the game of Survivor without having some sort of, you know, threat profile that people should be concerned about. And if you don't know what someone's threat profile is, you should. Otherwise, they're going to get you. So, you know, it's less public and less well known for these players that have only played one time. So, you know, everyone knows the things that Parvati does. You know, even people that are claiming to, oh, you're my Survivor crush, you know, Kentucky Nick, he's like, oh, you're my Survivor crush and all this stuff. And he didn't fall, you know, for Parvati's tricks a little bit to see what she has done. She's done so well so many times, and it's well televised. So everyone knows it. Doesn't mean it wouldn't work again, maybe, but not this time for her. Yeah.
Well, but now if you're going to move on to Parvati, I think she's a little more complicated in this season because, you know, Parvati's bag of tricks has been neutered since she last played because now she's married. She's a mother of a young baby. And she can't really get away with the kind of things that she could before. Nobody's going to buy it. You know, nobody's going to buy her flirtation and snuggling up on them. I'm not saying that she was, but no, you know, it's not believable. You're married. I'm not interested.
Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, she's a very charming personality though. And she does have a lot of insight and, you know, she uses that and knows how to use that. Well, I mean, I didn't think,
Of course, but I'm just saying it was, I think it's a lot more limited and I think she was a lot, I don't know. I think she was more, I don't want to say flat as a player, but I just don't think she was willing to go to the lengths that she had before now that her life situation has changed.
You know, well, let's, talk a little bit about Parvati. And so Parvati is reconnected with Yule. A lot of Cook Islands going on there. Candace, are you surprised that Parvati and Yule weren't able to at least get on the same page to some degree, where other than when she got there and then, hey, my wife's name is Sophie, she's a fan of yours. It seemed like that was the only conversation that we saw between Parvati and Yule.
I would not be surprised if that was the only conversation that was ever had between Parvati and Yule. They could not be two more different people and two more different personalities. I don't think they probably spoke more than a few words on Cook Islands. They are just 180 degree different life. Different outlook, and Yule was never, ever, ever going to have any of that.
Yeah,
at all. I mean, no chance. And Parvati's not stupid. She didn't waste her time on him because she knew she was not. You know, she was not going to bark up that tree. Mm-hmm. Yule is straight, narrow, analytical, no nonsense, and Parvati is the exact opposite: free spirit, silly, fun, loving kind of a person. And it's just not going to happen. That was never going to happen.
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting that, it seemed like that even, you know, that he knew that he was going out there and, you have to imagine that Parvati was going to be out there, that you would have thought that there would have been some sort of a thawing coming into this season. Do you know, Candace, was there like any bad blood after Cook Islands between Yule and Parvati?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I don't personally know of any bad blood. There would be never any reason for them to have any. But, I mean, Yule stayed to himself and wasn't in the scene and, you know, wasn't involved. So it's not a bad blood thing. It's just I feel that I know Yule. I know who he is very well. And there's just, I mean, it's just oil and water. Not that they...
Not blood and water.
That's right. That's right. They just would.
They're just really different people. And I can imagine that. I mean, I've been with both of them in person and talked to them. And it's just, you have very different interactions with both of them. I'm sure they could have worked together if it worked out from an analytical standpoint with Yule, but I don't think, before the game, if people were talking and stuff, I'm not sure that Parvati or Yule would have reached out to one or the other person because they're probably just going to end up playing the game very differently. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Cook Islands was quite a long time ago, and Parvati's played, several other times since then. So, she's formed a lot more connections and there's other people out there that she probably has other more gameplay connections with that she'd probably rather play with than Yule. So, I mean, just the fact that they were on the show together, so many years ago doesn't mean they were going to play together. You have to excuse me. I have to get a stink bug.
Okay. All right.
We have to burn
the house. I have to save my wife from the stink bug.
Yeah.
But get it. Save it. Okay. Anyways, let's talk about Yule though. I mean, he is, people don't know him. People don't know much about him because Yule, the kind of player that he is,
yeah,
he's a brilliant player and he's a brilliant person, but he doesn't get much airtime because his play is so under the radar, so calculated, so calm that it's not interesting for TV. So you don't see it. You don't, mm-hmm. you don't really see who Yul is every day. Now, Parvati, on the other hand, her play is interesting. It's a little bit out there, outlandish. It's fun. It's cute. So you see it, but so you people know who Parvati is more mm-hmm. and really people don't know who Yul is, but so that's why I'm trying to shed a little bit of light on it. But,
yeah.
You know, they're just so polar opposite. Not that they're, that they would have bad blood, like you asked, but there's I couldn't see the two of them in a room having a conversation. It's just awkward.
Only a hot tub, maybe.
Just a hot tub.
Yeah. In terms of Yul, that as a player, it seems like that, you know, Yul is very loyal. I feel like that, you know, he has his group. You're not ever afraid that he's going to, you know, flip on his group. But Candace, it seems like that he, you know, at least, you know, unlike Boston Rob, where it's like, hey, this is our group. Don't talk to us. You can't talk to me. I don't want to hear anything from the opposition. It does seem like that he's willing to, you know, talk to the people that are his, you know, perceived rivals. And it seems like that there is like he comes across as a negotiator, even though he is never mistook as being somebody who's not loyal to his group.
Right. Yul is the great negotiator, and Yul will sit and talk to every single person on the beach for hours on end individually all the time until you just cannot listen to him talk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He talks to the end of talking and until you just have to walk away because you can't hear it anymore. So in that way, he's able to talk to everyone because he will sit there and talk to a group of everyone for 3 hours and then you just can't handle anymore. So you just walk away and then he's got somebody alone. I don't know whether I don't think that is intentional because I've spent some time with him outside of the game too. And he has so much in his brain to talk about that he just keeps talking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to say that as an unkind thing to say about Yul. I mean, he's brilliant. And it's wonderful to hear him talk. I don't like talking to people that much. So maybe after 5 minutes, I'm done. So maybe that's just part of my personality.
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember from Cook Islands that he would just talk and talk and talk to the end of the earth and to every single person. So it was never perceived as a threat because he was just talking about everything in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that sequence of cowboy talking and they had the sun rising and then the sun setting and he was still talking. It was a little bit that way.
Yeah. But it seems like that Parvati wasn't somebody. I know that personality wise, they're not a match, but it seems like that Parvati felt like that he was very standoffish with her. And so it seems like that he's that way with almost everybody. But to Parvati, it seemed like that he did not want to have a lot of conversation with her.
Right. But he didn't need Parvati because he had his three boys that were loyal until the end. He mm-hmm. had the three under the radar guys, which were Wendell and Nick and Yul. And then they have the two girls. They don't need them at all. And, you know, Wendell, Nick and Yul already had a strong, solid alliance. So that tribe trade couldn't have happened any better for them at all. And honestly, I feel like the tribe trade that happened that way and put the three of them together is going to take the three of them to the end.
Okay. You know, in terms of where you guys started with this, talking about the swap to three tribes, I really do agree that in a season like this, while we did get a, you know, epic episode of the show last night, you know, we can't overlook that the fact that, you know, the three, you know, icons of the game in Rob and Sandra and Parvati are the three people who went out back to back to back here since we had gone down to three tribes. And maybe it's more fair in a situation where people all don't know each other to swap and go down to groups of five. But it does sort of put these really big targets on a silver platter for people where they're able to just, knock them all out of the game. Do you think that in a big all-star season like this, we're better off to potentially go to, just keep the tribes bigger? Or do you think that maybe that this is the game is the game?
Well, to some extent, the game is always the game. There's so many things that happen in the game. I mean, from playing it to watching it, you just realize everyone thinks that people that win have like this thing that they do that, this like algorithm for winning the game. But every season is different. Every game is different. There's so much luck that goes into winning the game of Survivor, and you see it every season that, there's good luck, good luck for some people, bad luck for others. And, I think the way the tribes worked out and the way the randomness of the three, going out of three tribes did not work out well for Poverty. It may have worked out well for Sandra. I think Denise made a really good move. Sandra wasn't really in the minority. She wasn't going to go home. I mean, Denise was going to go home. So Sandra had herself in a pretty good position, and Denise just protected herself and Jeremy and, idled Sandra out. And, but you gotta think about it. It was sort of, the names that kind of went. I mean, don't forget Tyson. Tyson went out right before, Boston Rob. Tyson, Rob, Poverty, Sandra. I mean, it's a pretty formidable foursome to go out like that. So I guess it depends on, if production wants to keep bigger people, bigger names, bigger threats in the game longer, having larger tribes probably works better in that regard. If you want to, ensure that other people kind of get a fair shake at it, it's really hard for Boston Rob to hide in a tribe of four or five people. Mm-hmm. He's like the quintessential Survivor player. I mean, he's played more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. He's a big target, and these other people who are also winners, to be honest, they might even be kind of sick of seeing Boston Rob around. I'm like, all right, let's not have him around. I love Rob.
I gotta disagree with that. I can see Boston Rob on my screen every single season. He's always entertaining.
You like him. I'm telling you, you're not playing the game right now. I know, but you're not. I love Rob, and like I love watching him. I love hearing him talk. Like, he's great. And he's a great storyteller, and he's great at the game. The things that he does are just like, man, if I were out there right now, like, I wish I could do some of these things as savvy as Rob does that. But, and just read people as well as he does. But the fact of the matter is, like, when you're out there, when you're also a winner of the game, and you realize people, you're like, F this guy, like, let's get him out of here. What does he have over all of us? Like, why are we going to allow him, this one person, to control how we want to play the game? And I can understand why, when you're playing in a season with him, when there's a bunch of other people that have made big moves, that, nobody out there got there. There may be some argument about this, but in general, nobody got out there without understanding the strategy of the game and just kind of like wishing their way to the victory. Like, they all made big moves. They all understand the game. They all made cutthroat decisions. And so, like Boston Rob or not, I would have been shocked if Rob sniffed anywhere near the victory. To be honest, I was shocked that Rob and Parvati weren't some of the first two or three people voted out of the game.
But I would have to say, as a fan, I think that maybe not in every season, but especially in this season, I feel like they have neutered the excitement of the play by making the tribe small. I need people go bouncing off of each other. But when you just have five people in a tribe, I'm bored.
Yeah.
Let's just merge now. Just merge now and just let the fireworks start.
Yeah. I really am surprised that the preview for next week looks like that we're going to, have a situation where we're going to vote somebody out of these tribes. And I feel like that no matter which tribe is going to go to tribal council, and this was, yes, the Denise and Sandra vote was very unexpected, but I kind of feel like I know who's going to go home from every tribe if we go to a tribal council.
Well, yeah. Listen, Rob, for many reasons, including coronavirus pandemic, and the three tribe situation on Survivor wake me up in 2 weeks.
I really was very surprised, especially that we're down to 12 people. We did a double elimination. Usually they merge at 13. I'm very surprised it's not the merge coming up next week, but I guess that they have a plan of what they want to do with this season. I want to go back to that Sandra Tribal Council, because, you know, we were talking about it when we opened the Survivor Know-It-Alls last night, of, you know, that there was, you know, some echoes of heroes versus villains at play, because you had where Sandra ended up once upon a time had two idols, or one of those idols was played on her in Heroes versus Villains, that she ends up going out in this season after Denise ends up playing two idols at one tribal council. And then also Steven was saying that Sandra got JT'd because she ends up giving her idol to somebody else. And then that she ends up then needing that same idol because she's the person who ends up getting voted out of the game. Candace, do you see any parallels to that Heroes versus Villains tribal?
I do. And I, you know, I didn't until you just said it, but I was very surprised in the way that she went out, because Sandra's not going to be happy with me for saying this, but I feel like she kind of became complacent. Mm-hmm. She's played too many times. She played back to back. I mean, not that she really played in the previous season, but I feel like she's just kind of sitting back. She wasn't hungry. She was just walking through the motions, because this is not the hungry, the vicious, do anything Hail Mary Sandra. You know, sniffing out what's going on. I just felt like that was not the Sandra that I know.
Well, maybe she's just at this point, she's trying to be, she's, you know, probably knows that, everyone knows that and thinks that about her. And so she's trying to maybe play it a little bit cool to not paint a big target on her back, because like Parvati, who's been all these seasons and people kind of know her tricks. Everyone knows Sandra's tricks by now. Like, they're not like, you can only have so many tricks that people don't know about.
That's
before
true.
Everyone's like,
that's
okay,
true.
I get it. I get it. Someone burned the socks. Okay, it was Sandra. You know, I get, oh, my hat's on fire. Okay, it must have been Sandra. You know?
You're right. So, I mean, she's overexposed. That's right. It's very difficult when people have.
She's probably trying to play it down. And maybe Parvati was doing the same thing. I don't know.
So in terms of Sandra, that I almost feel like that this was a very aggressive move on her part, that I feel like that if anything, I want to say she was the opposite of complacent, at least from and again, I've never been out there with her. So it's harder for me to be able to know, you know, what she's really like to play with. But, you know, she was so famous for anybody but me. You tell me a name, I'll write it down. I don't care. This was the exact opposite of that, I'll tell you the name to vote out here. This is my plan. I feel like that she got so far away from what her successful anybody but me strategy is.
Right. Okay. You're right. That was the wrong word. Not complacent. You're exactly right. But different from the way she plays, different from how she knows how to play it, which is, like you said, she went out and made up a plan and went out and sought something out that she didn't need to do. And so you're right. Complacent is the wrong word. It's just I don't know what the word I'm searching for is, but off the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's interesting to me that Sandra was doing that, because she was she's essentially putting all of her trust in Denise, who was in the minority.
And unknown to her.
Well, a little bit of an unknown, yeah. But yeah, Denise, one of the things that makes Denise such a terrific player is she develops trust very easily. She allows people to trust her very well. She's very good at listening, and she develops this trust very well. And she's been to more tribal councils, I think, per episode play than anybody in history. I don't know that stat, but it seems like it's gotta be true. She's been to almost every tribal council every time she's played. And she survives because, you know, people like her and they trust her. And she even talked about that as tribal counselor. She's like, you know, I developed this trust in these relationships and people can trust me moving forward. Everyone except for Sandra. But it's just something about her you know, so a couple of things. Number one, Sandra gave her an idol that was going to expire after that tribal council anyway. So Sandra knew to be smart. She wasn't trying to give her some forever idol. She probably figured she wasn't going to use it herself because she was trying to be a little bit under the radar. But if she gives it to Denise, maybe Denise can make a big move with this idol that Sandra doesn't really need to use. Mm-hmm. Denise can use make a big move as long as it's not Sandra. Again, anybody but me, it's fine. But again, you know, Denise is a little bit of an unknown, and she could have really voted for anybody. And it's just the whole thing. I mean, to get an idol, and then she played Sandra's idol first to make sure it was real. She got the fire token beforehand to make sure she got something. And then she had the extra idol and then just made sure that she protected Jeremy too, in case Sandra threw a vote at Jeremy to make sure there wasn't a tie. Like, I mean, to be honest, if you wanted to make a move to ensure that you just absolutely like went for the jugular and didn't let go, that's exactly what Denise did. It was really well thought out. It was an absolute gangster move. I loved it. It was, when Sandra was talking about it, I literally told Candace, I said, this would be hilarious if she votes Sandra out now. And you talked about getting JT'd. It's very similar to Eric Reichenbach thing too. You know, give your idol up and then you get voted out. I mean, there have been a couple of people that have done it. JT did with the hidden immunity idol, and I'm definitely totally okay with it being referred to being as JT'd.
Yeah,
but it was a great episode. It was a great move. I mean, the only one thing that you have to worry about is the edge of extinction is, you know, Sandra's not going to tell everybody about it. She's probably going to be on the jury. So, but the thing is, someone like Sandra, she might be pissed about it, but she's at the end of the game, she's going to respect that move.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to get your perspective, Candace, in terms of there was a lot of talk with this Dakal tribe over the last couple of weeks about, hey, there's the lions and there are the hyenas in this game. And hey, we are the bigger targets. We need to look out for one another. And it came up at the tribal council where, you know, Sandra was talking about like, oh, the players, you know, like me, like Rob, like Tyson, like Parvati, like Tony, like Jeremy, like Kim. You know, she went out of her way to sort of like label Denise as one of the players. Well, we're not as worried about, you know, the players like Denise. They don't have as big of a target on their back. And then by the end of that tribal council, the whole thing had gotten completely flipped around where Denise pulls off this all-time move. Did you feel like that you could relate to that at all from your experience in heroes versus villains? And was there any sort of talk about like, okay, we're sort of like the bigger targets that are out here, and then that they sort of treated players differently in terms of whether they were considered the quote unquote lions or hyenas?
Yeah. I mean, I think on heroes versus villains, I was probably considered one of the unknown players or one of the, you know, the smaller players, non-targets, just a space filler or something like that. And there were all these big egos of people who thought that they were mm-hmm. the lions, just like you said. I think it was also complicated by me originally having been planned to be on the villains tribe and then switch to the heroes tribe at the last second. The fans and the people on my heroes tribe were all wondering why I was over there. So I was a pariah on that tribe. But yeah, I mean,
can you talk about that? That you were like a last minute switch from one tribe to the other and it wasn't a mutiny?
Wow, that was a lot of deep references, Rob. My head is spinning, and I don't even know where to start.
Yeah,
I hope you have 30 minutes for this story. This is good.
I think people are interested.
Well, I think based on my performance and the mutiny in my first season on the Cook Islands, I think I was and. You know, let's say I had won Cook Island. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been shown to have been the villain in that season. You know, the story would have been painted differently.
Yeah.
if it had worked out in my favor. Right. So, but.
Wait, are you saying that Yule was way more villainous than people realized from his first season?
Yule could never be a villain in any circumstance ever. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, he was pretty aggressive in what you told me with Jonathan. And the reason why Jonathan ended up flipping on you guys is because of basically Yule threatened him with putting votes on him every tribal council with the then incredibly powerful hidden immunity idol that could be played after the votes were cast. So, you know, I mean, Yule had his things that he did that were
fairly hardball.
I mean, it was very analytical, but yeah, he played hardball. I mean, so yes, there's always the winner's edit. And I do feel that, Candace has been cast in a bad light in a lot of ways because of the meet me, but it was always such a dumb thing to me because like people do that all the time. And mm-hmm. you know, maybe not as publicly.
It was a move that was made before my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a very public thing that people do in private all the time. And so if I could shoot it publicly, I was like, oh, I can't believe it. You know, it's like, dude, get over it. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so.
But yes, I was.
Candace, John is such a defender of yours.
I mean,
I think kind of hell yeah, this chick, you know?
Yeah.
who'd have thunk it?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think to everyone who watched that season felt that I was the villain from, you know, having done the mutiny. And then I come onto a season that is labeled heroes versus villains, and I show up on the hero side.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, "What's going on?"
Yeah, but tell the story about like the wardrobe pain.
I will. But you know, the people who are on my tribe as the heroes, they all you know see themselves as a hero, and they are like, "Who's?" I mean, this chick does not fit the mold, so we don't want anything to do with her. But. Basically, if you look back here on heroes versus villains, the heroes were the blue tribe and the villains were the red tribe, mm-hmm. and everybody's wardrobe was arranged as such.
Right.
So everybody was wearing pink or red on villains, and everybody was wearing, you know, blue basically on the heroes tribe. And my original wardrobe, when I went in for the wardrobe fitting on location, and, you know, they take the pictures of everything that you're wearing. I had pink shorts. I had a pink shirt. I had a pink jacket. Everything was pink. So pink and red, basically. And I was looking at all the other bags that were in there of the wardrobe. And I realized when I was in there in that room and I saw the bags, I realized that it was red and blue. And so I was frantically looking at the initials that were on the bags, and I basically figured out who was on each tribe by looking at the bags.
Yeah.
And so with that information, I was trying to give eye signals, and I actually maybe I shouldn't say this, but I had an off topic, or I don't know, an off the rule book short conversation with Rob, and I passed him, you know, the names of all people that were on the red tribe, because I asked him what color he was wearing. And I found out that he was red and that we were going to be on the same tribe. But anyways, at the last minute, I believe because there was some sort of mutiny in the pre-game camp, that it was going to be Parvati, Amanda, Sari, James, and I think that's probably it. But they had all played in
Micronesia.
In Micronesia,
yeah.
So it was the Micronesia crew, and everybody was really, really worried about that and making a big scene over it. And so maybe when they got there, they saw that this is just too many people from Micronesia, and they're all best friends. This is too much. So. They switched me at the last minute the day before. They changed my bathing suit. They went out and bought me a bathing suit and brought me something to change into that was blue. They brought, so the bathing suit that I wore, they brought to me at the last minute. They changed out my sweatshirt. They brought me a blue sweatshirt. And so the only thing that was remaining that was pink or red was my pink shorts.
Mm-hmm.
But everything got changed at the last minute from pink to red to blue. So that's how I knew I got changed to a different tribe. I knew that going in. I mean, I didn't know how it was going to be divided. But I knew that they had changed the plan.
Yes. Were you happy to be a hero?
No, I mean, I thought my edit was a villain's edit, and I thought I was going to do better with those people mm-hmm. who were a little more duplicitous. But when I got into the hero group, these people didn't want to do anything. They mm-hmm. were lame. So I was just sitting duck, and nobody wanted to do anything. They were, I mean, it was like JT and Rupert carrying the American flag around and marching down the beach, and Colby. I didn't even know what to do. I'm like, how do I play Survivor with these people? This is like Boy Scouts are us.
All right. Well,
the story gets better every time.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being patriotic and being a good person, but that's not Survivor.
Yeah.
It is boring to me. The point is, but Parvati got to play. She got switched from a hero. I mean, however they were going to paint her story as a hero because she won. I mean, who cares? But she got to play and have fun. Mm. And I had to sit with the lame ass, boring people where I was just stuck and they didn't want anything to do with me.
Yeah. And the villains tribe, though, you know, might be cursed now because now you have four straight people from that villains tribe who have all gone out of the game in Tyson and then Rob and Parvati and Sandra.
It's because they're too good.
They're too good.
You got to cut down the strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The villains tribe in that season was an epically good tribe. I mean, there were so many great personalities and characters in that tribe. I'm not saying that there weren't some great ones in the Heroes tribe. You know, Candace was awesome. And, you know, there were some very good quintessential people that we all loved. When you think about the people that have gotten a lot of traction and played Survivor multiple times, like, and people that are just iconic, there's a lot of them that were on that tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is wild because then you have like the weirdness with the heroes versus villains, blood versus water, where you guys are sort of brought in last minute there also, Candace, right?
Oh my God, that was the worst. I don't know how deeply you want to go into the backstory.
Well, you guys were all alternates, right? And then there was an issue with RC and her dad, and then you guys came in last second.
Yeah, and the way we came in, everybody's standing on the beach getting ready to take the cast photo facing the water, and they have us walk up, and they say, oh, and here's our last two people. We walk up to the edge of the group, and they snap a picture, and if you could have probably gotten the outtake of the first picture that was taken, everybody's jaw was on the floor, and their tongue hanging out, wondering, like, how the hell did these two people get mm-hmm. here?
And they've been out there looking at each other for a week. Yeah, right, and yeah. We flew out there on a helicopter that day. We talked to nobody. We see nobody. Obviously, all the pre-production stuff. Like, we're not talking to anybody, but we're doing all of our pre-production stuff. We're getting our wardrobes taken care of and all that. And like, and then literally, we are introduced to the cast that night. Mm-hmm. We all have like dinner quietly. We're like staring at everybody, but you can't talk. And then the next morning, we get into our game attire and go out. And so, and then we get out in the game and we have our like nice night out together as, you know, our little twosomes everywhere. But then the following morning, like the real game starts and then you can vote someone out. And it's like, people have been looking at each other for a week and no one knew what happened. And there was no explanation about what happened to RC and her dad. And
when you're scared, when you're scared, you have to make a vote without talking
to anybody. We have no idea who this person is. And plus, you know, there was all this, like, I think it's safe to say now, there's all this pregame discussion of stuff, and we were kind of involved in some of that, but you know, this is sort of like when it was still taboo to do it, and some people were kind of hush talking, but everybody was doing it a little bit. And so, you know, not to want to be lost from that, we sort of had some, you know, talk with some people, nothing specific like, oh, we're gonna do X, Y, or Z, but just kind of like keeping the line of communication open. Hey, we're here to play, we want to play with people and stuff. But then when we were told that we weren't going, it was just no communication with anybody for two or three weeks. Yeah. So everybody had sort of like kind of gotten there. They continued this conversation and we were out of it. And then all of a sudden we show up last minute and they're kind of like, what the heck happened? You know, were they lying to us? It's just, you know, maybe people were planning on working with RC and, mm-hmm. and her dad, and then all of a sudden just screwed everything up. And so, or maybe they're planning on voting her out. And then when we replace them, they're like, oh, well, we'll just vote out Candace instead. Like, I don't really know how it all worked. It didn't work out that well for our game. Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't going to vote out John because they were wanting him to build their shelter for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was awesome at building shelter. Not like Wendell. Wendell seems to be pretty pretty amazing shelter builder.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, since you're talking about the pregame conversations also, let's go back to Rob and Sandra, where that they had this sort of weirdness going back to the preseason where, okay, Rob didn't tell Sandra that he was going to go out there, and then she was mad at him. And then that was sort of a big thing early on in the season. But then Amber got voted out, Rob got voted out. So it seemed like that it was all, in the past, but wait a second, Sandra is now on her way to the edge of extinction with Rob and Amber. Do we expect there to be fireworks on the edge of extinction in next week's episode?
I would bet that it gets talked about that. I bet Sandra brings up to Rob, like, why didn't you tell me you were coming? Like, I can imagine Sandra feeling the way that she felt, being like, I just spent 6 weeks with this guy, like, literally. Like, I don't know how long, there's only a few days in between production of the two seasons. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I just had 6 weeks with this guy, and he never one time mentioned that he was going to come out here. And Sandra, I can't remember if Sandra said that she told him she was coming out for, like, the winter season or something. And maybe she didn't say that, but she's like, I don't know if, like,
so she, I think she did. I think she had told him that she was going to go play, and he was like, hey, I'm not playing. I'll never do it again.
Right. So I was like,
Amber's over it.
Yeah, Amber. And I will say it was awesome to hear when they were on edge of extinction, and Rob's like, Amber, I think it's up here. I was like, oh, that's so great to hear it again on the show. But I think I would be shocked if it's not brought up. I mean, maybe it gets brought up and they don't air it because there's other stuff going on. But I'm sure there's some uncomfortable things happening at edge of extinction right now. And Rob can't be pleased with Sandra. He knows that she had to be behind the Amber vote.
Yeah. Candace, as a returning player, that do you feel like that one, either Rob or Sandra, was more right, or you feel like that they're both wrong in this scenario?
Well, in every scenario, both people are wrong because everybody has their own truth. But mm-hmm. I feel like the only reason Rob would not tell Sandra is that he had to be very nervous about coming back as a couple with Amber. And because, if he didn't have Amber attached to him, which I feel for Rob, because having your loved one in the game with you greatly alters your ability to play the game, because you're not free. You are tied down by that person that you are tied to because you have loyalty to them over everything else. So you can't make, you can't make the decisions that you would make, the selfish decisions that you would make, and the clear-headed decisions that you would make if you're alone, when you have someone else that you're looking out for above all else. So I feel like Rob, would have and should have loved to tell Sandra, but he had to have, there had to be some reservations in his mind about coming and playing with Amber and then being a target, and Sandra seeing them as a target and putting them on blast, which I feel like would be the only reason that he wouldn't tell her. I still think he should have told her, but because she's going to find out as soon as you walk on the beach, dude.
Was there a lot of pre-gaming that went on before Heroes versus Villains? Because I was so far out of the Survivor loop at that point when you guys went to go film that season that I really don't know a lot about what was going on during that time.
I was 100% out of it at that time. I was a good girl and I was following all the rules, and I was not about to mess up my chance. But by the time it came around to my third time, I feel like the game had evolved so much, and there were so many people that were returning players coming back, and so much, social media had evolved so much at that point, so that people were really connected much better. I don't even know if Twitter was a thing during Heroes Villains. So that the players and the fans were not connected as much, but social media evolved by the time we did Blood versus Water so much that it was super easy to connect with each other, even if you're not in the Survivor scene, which I was not. So I don't know whether I'm sure the people who played together, like the Micronesia crew, you know, had a chat.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not aware of exactly who was coming, for Heroes versus Villains. I'm trying to remember. I think the pre-game, health checkup and everything else was done pretty individually. So I don't think I really saw too many people. I'm trying to remember. It's all kind of blurring together.
Yeah. No, it's not that important.
I saw. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you both about, you went through Redemption Island on Blood versus Water, and now here we are with the Edge of Extinction. Do you guys feel like that Redemption Island is comparable to the Edge of Extinction at all?
Not as much. Redemption Island, there was no social game to be had. It was strictly a competition. If you win the competition, you move on.
Mm-hmm.
But on, hold on, what's the other name?
Edge of Extinction.
Oh my God, Candace. This girl has like naming issues. I'm shocked that she's been able to pull the names out from the people in the season. Like, people that have done this show. I mean, she like forgets the names of people that are on this show. We watch them every night and she like can't remember their names. She's like, that guy is Nick. And I'm like, I mean, she knows these people and she like knows their names.
Don't say that about Nick.
You know Nick. I'm just kidding. But, but in general, we're watching like a new player season of Survivor. I mean, it'll be a little bit like the final episode. Like, who are these people again?
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. The Edge of Extinction. God, you took so long, I forgot the name again. The Edge of Extinction is largely, as we saw with like two seasons ago, I can't remember the name of that season. Was it called
Edge of Extinction? Called the Edge of Extinction, yeah.
Okay. See, that was an easy one. That was right out there for me. Low-hanging fruit. That was a hugely social game out there. I mean, you have the chance to go back into the game and you're interacting with the jury the entire time. So you can...
Yeah, I mean, that's easily the biggest difference is that the Redemption Island, one person goes back and oftentimes he's floated out right away.
And it's it's just a game. It's a competition.
Right, but there's no
social aspect. Right.
And it's a little bit different because in the seasons that I've had, this season and the Edge of Extinction season, it's weird because like the person coming back almost has like this huge unfair advantage. If they get to the end, they have formed an even bigger relationship with all the people that are on the Edge of Extinction that, I mean, they're the jury. It's wild because no one ever gets to sit with the jury and talk with the jury ever. And so, you know, when Chris won a couple seasons ago, it was just, I mean, he did do some things to push his name into a very deserving winning category. When you think about the number of days he actually spent in the game versus the number of days he spent on the Edge of Extinction, it's
prepping the jury.
Just prepping the jury. I mean, he spent all his time prepping the jury and then made like one bold play where he gave up his own safety and then made fire against Evans and beat him. And then it was like, okay, now... And the jury's like, okay, cool. Like, this is our friend, and he did this cool thing. Now he can win the game. And he comes in the game with, like, essentially an immunity idol and just, like, loaded with all these weapons. And all the information, the biggest thing is you come back into the game with a season's worth of intel on everyone, every single person's dirty laundry. I mean, you can say whatever you want to people that come back in the game. So you have all this information from all the other walks. You can synthesize it. You can twist it however you want, and then you can tell that information in a very believable way to the people remaining in the game to just twist their thinking and how they view their current alliances and the people they've. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's almost an unfair advantage. You never think about it, but it truly is an unfair advantage if you come back from the Edge of Extinction with the jury management that you have, the information you have, and then when they give him like the ability to get a sit-in immunity idol or something, it was like, how do you not get to the final three with that?
Yeah, I was interested to know your opinion on, okay, Tyson Apostle, the winner of Survivor Blood versus Water. He's on the edge of extinction. He's got his hands on a fire token. And I was very surprised that Tyson ended up cashing in right away for that big jar of peanut butter. And
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah.
You were not surprised.
I was surprised. I thought, okay, he's going to cash in and buy an advantage in the challenge. But there it is that he bought the peanut butter. I just want to, as people that have been, competing on Redemption Island, as people that know Tyson and as physicians, was that a good decision to spend the fire token on all that peanut butter?
I mean, Tyson's an athlete and he's good at these types of challenges. He's a smart guy. And I think
Tyson has a dad bod this season.
Well, I know. All right. I know. I mean, he's a dad.
We're not going to body shame Tyson.
I love you, Tyson.
I know he's a, but Tyson is,
he still has great hair.
Right. He does have terrific hair. And even those of us that
make him, Tyson's one of my favorites. I'm just teasing. I love him. I love him so much.
So for those of us that maintain a dad bod, we can still be athletes and perform very well in these challenges. We just have a little extra energy for the later run of the game. So I would have been disappointed if Tyson didn't do something kind of fun and cheeky like that and get the peanut butter, because to be honest, he may not, I mean, maybe he's somebody who's going to do well in the challenge anyway, I think. But he's just kind of like a live in the moment kind of a guy. And he's like, you know what? I don't really feel like being out here for the rest of the time that I had the peanut butter and how much joy that he gets from that. Maybe having that every day allows him to have some happiness and, keep his mental edge while he's not out there starving and suffering all the time, and it keeps him sharper to do the things that he needs to do. So, I mean, everyone has what it is that makes them tick. For me, I've said, I do okay with like lack of sleep and being very hungry. So I'm not somebody who would ever kind of jump down from a challenge to eat, unless it was making some sort of like a social or some sort of other statement, like a strategic move. Because I don't feel like I would need that. But some people do, and like they know themselves and they need that to be acute mentally with it. And maybe Tyson needed that. I think the joke is just calling it out. Yeah. It's got to be close to 20,000 calories.
Yeah, I was trying to do the math on that. I mean, it's so much peanut butter.
I couldn't eat. I love peanut butter. I don't think I could eat that much in the amount of time that he has left potentially on edge of extinction.
Candace, do you think that he could get busted by people? Because I just feel like that when you're on the Survivor, that I feel like that your sense of smell is so heightened, right?
Yeah.
That is.
Dude, why do you smell like peanut butter?
Yeah, it's weird.
That's true. But if he's practicing his COVID-19 social distancing and staying safe 6 feet away, I think he'll be okay.
Okay. So maybe if like Tyson, maybe Tyson had to do that before everybody else. So that's how he's ahead of the game.
He just had to make sure he ate it in the morning after they woke up from their being in close quarters in the shelter.
Yeah. I do think it's going to be very interesting to watch now. Does Tyson end up having like way more energy when all of these tasks involve, okay, now everybody's running off and going in these different directions to find the little other, advantages that are hidden on the edge of extinction. And then eventually when they have the challenge, if he just has way more gas in the tank than anybody else does.
I think it's got to help. But I think Survivor production in general has realized over the years that if people have no energy to do the regular things, they also have no energy to strategize, go around and make their spy shacks and do crazy things and find idols. So it makes for a less entertaining show. So they do provide the baseline nutrition that people need to get up and be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if it were an old school season where they're not providing food and they're not providing nutrition, everyone really is just barely making it. I think it would have been a huge, huge advantage. I think it's still an advantage, but I don't think the margin is as great in one of these modern seasons where they are providing baseline nutrition and rice for these people. But I really don't think there was any other move for Tyson. I was completely delighted. Mm-hmm. I love it. It was
as a viewer, I really enjoyed it. It was fun to watch. Somebody who, just trying to think about the gameplay and everything, I do worry that as somebody who likes Tyson a lot, I worry that it was a little short-sighted because you don't really know what the whole deal with the fire tokens is going to be and how much that's going to, buy into or play into you any sort of advantage or something at the end. Like, obviously, it's going to have a role to play if Edge of Extinction is doing these things and giving these advantages to people for these fire tokens. The fire tokens can't last forever. So there has to be some, I would just imagine.
But that's not Tyson's game. Tyson's game is not to be like the brilliant strategist who makes some crazy move with the fire tokens as leverage on somebody. Tyson's move is to buy the peanut butter and just bask in it. I could see him just eating the peanut butter in front of everybody.
Well, I was going to say, I'm shocked he hasn't bragged about it to everybody yet. Like, look at all this peanut butter I got.
Yeah. I wonder if he did, show off that he had the peanut butter, or if they found out. I wonder, would they all just, start cashing in their fire tokens, and then everybody would just be there, on a picnic with all the different things that are available to buy? And do they have many other jars of peanut butter, or did Tyson buy the one and only jar of peanut butter on the Edge of Extinction? Is that off the menu?
That's a good question. Now, I want to ask you a question, Rob. Are you aware of, there was this show, this reality show on MTV a couple years ago. What was the name of it, John? It was made by the producers of Survivor.
Yeah.
But it was, do you know what I'm talking about?
Stranded with $1 million, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But this was part, I think this was an idea that they tried out on that show where they give these people cash, and on Survivor now it's
Stranded with $1 million.
Yeah. Right. And anybody could take money out of the pot and then buy
the things off the menu. Right. I think that's where they got that. They tested out that idea. I don't know how relevant it is to this conversation, but when I saw the menu and the buying of things and buying of tarp and everything, I mean, that's exactly what happened on the other show.
Yeah.
And for people that have actually watched Hunger Games, they would have stuff like that in Hunger Games as well. Now, Rob, I know you're not a Hunger Games connoisseur.
Yeah, not like Candace.
Like the rest of the tweens that are on this podcast right now, Candace and I, but.
Oh, yes, you're big into it too?
No, John, definitely not big into it.
I did read the book very quickly.
Yes.
If I wanted to have any interaction with Candace about anything in life, it was going to be, I had to read these books while she was reading them. So I read
That's
them
right.
all, yes.
Cody Book Club.
So this is you guys were dating, and then that Candace told you, John, that you had to read all the Hunger Games?
No, Twilight was when we were dating. Hunger Games was after we were married.
I did not read all of Twilight. I read some of
just
Twilight,
of,
and I'm very embarrassed by it. I'm very embarrassed by it.
John had a shoulder surgery during that time, and he had been under anesthesia and was waking up and was telling the PACU nurses about Twilight and Jacob versus, what's the other guy's name?
Edward
versus Jacob.
Yeah, are you team Edward or team Jacob?
Team Jacob all the way.
Okay. Oh.
I'm just kidding. I just said, I don't even
know. No, he's not.
Who's the wolf?
Not
Jacob's the wolf, right?
Yeah.
God, I can't believe I'm talking about this publicly. It was way more embarrassing. It's way more embarrassing actually for me now because I'm not under the drug that I was when I was coming out of surgery.
Okay.
I'm actually talking about this in real life.
Speaking of embarrassing moments, let me ask a little bit about, Nick ended up revealing to Parvati about that she was his high school crush. And I want to know what was the better admission of a crush? Was it Nick with Parvati or was it Billy Garcia with Candace?
I mean, the more iconic is Billy Garcia.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the Billy one was way less awkward, but maybe it was just so painfully awkward that it just made it less awkward. Yeah,
the Billy's was not directed to your face. I mean,
yeah, you said we love you. Well, I know, said I love
did,
you.
You didn't get that. You're sort of like, ah, that's weird. And then but then he announced it very publicly, Travel Council, which was amazing for viewership. Mm-hmm. But you didn't hear about the whole story until later.
I mean,
Nick said in the confessional that Parvati was his crush, and they kind of walked up to her and told her that, and she's like, great.
Yeah.
She's like, cool, I watched your season two. What do you say to that? It's super awkward.
Yeah. He actually announced it at the tribal council first and then told Parvati. Right. Yeah, it was reverse.
I will say, from a viewer perspective and it makes Nick seem he always just seemed a very human guy, a very down to earth person. Mm-hmm. And everyone had that type of person, and if you were able to, you're a huge Survivor fan.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, my Survivor crush was Candace, and I told her that, and it was fine.
That's a lie. John had never seen Survivor before we met. Hold on. So now that you draw the comparison, Rob, is it possible that Nick remembered that and remembered the tribal council admission of love from Billy and then realized he had to fess up to Parvati's face to try to make it less awkward so that he didn't hear about it
secondhand?
That's right. And they didn't have the same unrequited love scene with him as they did with Billy. So he was trying to, he remembered that, and he was trying to save face and not become Billy 2.0.
Well, I have to 100% say though, there's a big difference between saying, hey, 7 or 8 years ago when I was a high school kid, you were my big crush.
True.
And saying I'm in love with you. And we have literally shared zero words together. I saw you from a far way away and I love you.
It's true. We're dogging on Nick a little bit here.
Apples and oranges.
let me ask you just on a more serious note about that. Yule has been very vocal this season about the work that he's doing in terms of fundraising for ALS and to help out Jonathan Penner and his wife, Stacy. Candace, were you aware of that all those things that Yule was doing prior to the season coming up?
I was not aware of Yule's work in trying to, support ALS charities to find a cure for ALS. No, I was not aware of that. And I actually was not aware that they were so close. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that Yule kept in touch with anybody from the season so much, because I feel like even he and Becky, who were super close during the season, had kind of lost touch a little bit. Becky lives here in DC. So I've had a few interactions with her over the years, but no, I was not aware that they were so close. I was aware of Stacy's battle with ALS. Mm-hmm. And it's devastating. I feel for the Penner family so much. One of the biggest things that I can remember about Jonathan in the Cook Islands was how much he adores Stacy with every part of his being, and it seeped out of him, and he would sit around camp and talk about her all the time. It was very touching. And I think it was part of the reason he rubbed some people the wrong way, because he was on tribes with younger people who didn't have that kind of experience in life of that deep love, and they couldn't understand it and didn't really want to hear it. And the younger people really just, I think were a little bit turned off by that and made, I think there were a couple times where they made fun of him for some of the things that he was saying, not about Stacey or anything, but just, I think they were just taking things more lightly when he was talking very seriously about his deep love and adoration for his wife, and they just couldn't get it. But that there was a big disconnect between Jonathan and the younger players because that was really what he wore Stacey on his sleeve. And that is Jonathan, you know, that is the biggest thing that I have always remembered about him. I mean, like I said, I don't like talking to people that much, but I know a lot about Stacey Title because I've listened to Jonathan talk about her and his love for her so much. So it's just, I mean, it's devastating for any family to go through. And the fact that they have two children who are at risk of inheriting the disease, it's, you know, I can only imagine.
Yeah,
his whole life kind of coming around him.
You know, it's a terrible, terrible disease, and I didn't know a lot about it before this, but just to go to see them, and, you know, I've done many podcasts with Penner over the years, and I would go to their house and go, like, bring my stuff over there and just, you know, to see how quickly this disease took its toll on Stacey. It was just a horrible thing to watch.
Yeah, it's completely devastating.
Yeah, and it's nice that at least in this season where Yule has come back, where they've been able to bring some awareness to it, and that's been a nice thing to be able to shine a spotlight on that. I have a bunch of questions for you two from the listeners of the podcast.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. All right. First of all, let me give you a question. This is a little out there. Okay, Candace. So you played in season 13, season 20, season 27. I have to think they must have asked you to be in season 34. Am I wrong?
Which season was
Game
that?
Changers.
I think they asked John.
That's right.
Okay.
So you took my place in the Cody.
And what happened? Did you pass?
So they've asked me twice. There was one time the supposed name of the season where the fans voted in. I forget.
Oh, Second Chances.
Second chances. So they asked me for changes. Second Chances, and then Game Changers was shortly thereafter. So for Second Chances, they asked me to be there, and just from the Army was not 100% pleased that I had gone out and done my first stint on Survivor while I was in residency training. And nothing bad ever happened, but I was still at the tail end of my residency, and it was not going to end up working out for me. And the production people were like, "Well, it's a vote out. We don't want you to have to run the risk of getting in trouble and then maybe not even get voted on the show." So that didn't end up working out. And the second time for Game Changers, I was finishing up my joint replacement fellowship, and I essentially had to tell them I couldn't do it professional reasons. And that was tough. I really wish I had the opportunity that time, because I think it would have been a really fun time. Let's say they want to ask me again at some point in the future, but yes, I feel like you can only say no so many times before they stop knocking at
your door.
You're
off the list.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, they pull out some of these older people every now and then. And I think Candace got another shot at some point. They've shown some interest, for Amazing Race for the two of us. When they did the combined season, they kicked the tires on us for that. We were unable to make that happen, but I like to think that we're on some short list somewhere for some people.
Yeah. I'm sure you must, have thought this through for all these players who in the times that they've played before did not have kids. And now to go back as a parent, how do you think it would change both of you as players?
Well, I do also want to say that before we answer that question, Candace was, I don't know, we didn't talk about this, but Candace was actually initially talking before they figured out they were going to do an all winter season. They called Candace up being on season 40.
Okay. Interesting.
So just, yeah. So she was on, she's definitely on somebody's short list. But then, you know,
it was sort of a very, very long list.
Well, it may have been, obviously they didn't have their, who knew if they were going to do like, you know, winners versus people who had, you know, who had won before, whatever, some sort of, but she had been called for that. And so,
it's weird that, well, that sometimes was, they call John and sometimes they call Candace.
Yeah. It depends on what they want for the season.
Yeah.
But
it, it's like, do you hold it over each other? Though. It's like, hey, guess who they called? Guess who they want more to that?
Are they looking for a villain?
Let me tell you something. If one of us wins, both of us wins, so I don't really care. just so long as they don't call both of us back to go again, because that was a really,
That did not go well.
I just think that what Candace said earlier, like, if I go back again, I want to play and I want to be able to play for me. And I think Candace probably feels the same way. You get a chance to go out there and play. You know, for her.
Look at Jeremy. He went out in Blood versus Water, and then Val got voted out, and it really threw him off. And then he comes back and he won second chances.
Absolutely.
You got to shake off the old ball and chain, man.
But yes, to think about like going back. So when Candace was holding on standards, when Candace was called again, it's just a completely different set of circumstances. Like, you know, forget about all the work stuff you got to do. And, you know, everyone has work stuff they have to figure out. Some people lose their job, you know, if they leave for 6 or 8 weeks in the middle of the summer. And, you know, we don't have that, but like we have to coordinate call and all sorts of things. And then, oh my God, to think about like kids. A lot of the people that are out there now playing for their second or third time, you know, didn't have kids before. So it really does hit home for us to think, you see Kim Spradlin and Parvati and, you know, some of these other people out there now with their kids. And it's like, it's gotta be so hard. Oh, and then with, you know, Rob and Amber, I know Rob's left the kids before, but now both of them are out there and you know, it's gotta be so hard. And especially with Amber getting voted out early, like it's gotta be so hard to like stomach that, knowing what you left behind. It's just a completely different situation. You played it. I'm sure you play differently. There are different things you think about when you have kids. Like you just view life so differently. I'm sure you view and play the game differently too.
Tess Hagen has a question. Since Yule is the last old schooler, do you think that he'll be overlooked and make it far, or does he have a bigger target now on his back than before? It seems like that the all the players from the early seasons now have been picked off. I guess Yule is the most senior ranking player still in the game. Does that make him a target now?
No, he's 100% under the radar. He's got his alliances set. He's got his whole network established. I think Yule is a huge threat to go all the way to the end. I don't know if Yule can win because I'm not sure that I don't know if he'll be able to appeal to people, but I'm hesitant about that because Yule does, like I said, sit with people and will talk to you, you know, to the end of the world. So he may have really real connections with people. I have a strange feeling that, I think I read somewhere that there were some strange interactions with everybody and Yule on social media that basically nobody's really responding to him.
So Yule has really on social media, people have been loving Yule on social media and really have
the
been
cast members have not, right?
Well, that I guess he does a lot of stuff on social media and the fans have been very interactive with Yule and people have been very excited. They didn't know that he had such a great sense of humor, but then he made a post about how then none of the other castaways were interacting with him on social media.
Weird. Why would you do that?
Candace, is Yule a funny guy behind the scenes?
Not really.
It's been a while.
Because he's been very funny on social media.
No, he's very smart and he can be funny. I agree. But in real life, no, that's not really his thing. So, I mean, he's serious and he's analytical. But what I'm saying is the point. OK, you're right. So I read. So that was fake news written by Yule.
Mm-hmm.
That no. I mean, it's,
and then the other castaways were like, yeah, what is it with that guy? You know, they were all like jumping in on it.
Well, I didn't follow the thread after the first time that I saw it, but it did make me suspect that there was some jealousy that maybe Yule's the winner and they're all pissed. And they're like, I don't want to laugh at your jokes. I don't want to hear it because you just won $2 million and I'm not going to pat your back because I wish it was me.
So if
he's the person who comes back from the edge or something.
I think that's my theory. That's my theory that Yule won. Pissed because he's got $2 million in his pocket and he's making jokes on social media and they're like, I don't want to hear your damn jokes.
Yes. And Candace, do you know this because you did not put Yule in your MySpace top eight when Cook Islands was airing?
Oh my God. MySpace.
Did you have Yule as a friend on MySpace? And was he funny then?
No, I did not. And no, he was not. But I will say, everyone told each other who they voted for on the way back when we were traveling.
Yeah.
Back. And I was a staunch fan of the show and I did not want the show to be spoiled. And so I knew after hearing who everybody had voted for that it was going to be 4-4 Ozzy versus Yule with one vote in the middle. And so I told it, I did not want the show to be spoiled. So I told everyone that I voted for Becky.
Hmm.
So,
oh, Becky could have been the first Laurel.
Oh yes, she could have. She could have, but I wasn't going to do that because then you couldn't even make fire. So that was an abomination, but she couldn't make fire with a book of matches, but
yeah.
I digress.
Did that get out? Did people think that it was going to be a tie in terms of like what the spoilers were saying?
I'm not sure what the spoilers were saying, but I know that Ozzy thought that he was going to be tied going into the final. And I think that's why Ozzy has never wanted anything to do with me ever again, because he went into it thinking that he might be tied and have a chance.
He didn't run up any credit cards or anything, right?
I don't know. I thought he sold that car that he won because he didn't want to pay the taxes on it.
Yeah.
That's what he told me.
Well, that's what happened to Russell in his first season, that he ended up that he thought he won Samoa. And then that I think then had like a lot of bills to pay after, because I think that he spent a lot of money.
What a dummy. Sorry, Russell.
Hey, he's having a great week. And he was very excited last night to see Sandra and Parvati go out.
True.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the fire making with Becky and Sandra, Candace. That's a staple now. That's a part of the show. Do you like that there's a Final Four fire making, or do you feel like that one of these times we're going to get like a Becky and a Sandra again, if that's possible, and then that's going to be the end of the Final Four fire making?
I kind of hope that we get a Becky Sandra situation and the fire making goes out. I mean, yes, it is true that you should be able to make fire when you come out, you know, by the time you get to the end of the show, but is it really what the show is about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about conniving. It's about being able to do all the social things and do all these exercises to get yourself to adapt and to have an advantage over someone. And when you just come down to strictly a fire making challenge, and it's predictable, you know, at least make it something different. I mean, remember when they had, who was it, Ian and Tom standing on a buoy for 11 mm-hmm. hours. I mean, that's exciting. I was waiting. I was always waiting to see what's the endurance challenge going to be and how long are you going to stand up there? I just feel like Jeff got tired of sitting out there for 11 hours and just wanting to be over with. Like, Jeff's got places to go.
A quicker endurance challenge.
He needs to get his nails done. I don't know. He's tired of it. He's been doing this for 20 years. He ain't got time for that.
You know, we really haven't talked at all about the other tribe, the Yara tribe, that ended up not having to go to tribal council. John, did you have any thoughts about the Yara group with Sophie and Sarah and Ben and Adam?
Yeah, I think, you know, Adam, sort of, you know, the tribe swap could not have come at a better time for Adam. You know, he was really digging himself a pretty deep hole with, Rob and Parvati and his tribe and sort of trying to play both sides and everything. So, but it's funny, his confessional kind of at the beginning, you know, they're all excited because, you know, how things were, you know, they voted out Rob, but now he's like, I am the odd man out. Like, everyone here is getting along and no one talks to me. So I think, you know, it's good. It's really good for him that they won. I think, like you said earlier, you know, with almost every tribe, I can very much see that Adam would probably be the person. You know, if they go to tribal next week, I feel like Adam is going to be the person that goes home in that group. But I think, you know, you're looking at Ben is not. He's done better a little bit in the last couple episodes as far as his like. Social play and everything, but Ben was never like a big social player in his season. He won sort of, you know, excellent individual challenge play. And, you know, and then Sophie's always kind of dangerous. Mm-hmm. She kind of flies under the radar. So yeah, I think they have a very intriguing group. I think they're all very strong physically. And I think it works out very well for them, but there isn't a whole lot of mystery to me. I feel like, reading the tea leaves, Adam would be the next person to go home if they go to tribal council.
I mean, that's certainly what it seems like. Candace, do you have a favorite out of that group?
My, you know, favorite is...
See, can I make a guess? Can I guess?
Yes.
Would think that maybe it would be Sarah Lucina, because then she beat Brad Culpepper in Survivor Game Changers.
I like Sarah. I do like Sarah. I've always liked Sarah. I thought Sarah.
John,
was good.
Let's let John talk about his crush.
Sarah's not my crush. I think Sarah. I like Sarah. I think she's a very
blushing.
Real person. No, I'm not. But you can't even see me. I mean, we're social distancing inside the household. So, I like Sarah, and I thought that. One of the reasons why I like Sarah is because I thought that Brad played a very good game in Game Changers and really up until the final tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
Really, right, up until the final tribal council, which is really where a lawyer should shine. Like, I feel like if you're an attorney, like,
so
final tribal council should be like,
case.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he said on social
well,
media.
Whatever.
That's what he said. Or no, anyway, he said that
whatever.
On the show. He said, I've never been in a $1 million case.
I don't think he's on social media. He said,
no, he said it. He said it on the, he said it on the show. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so the whole point is you'd think that somebody who uses words for a living would do really well. And I was sort of disappointed in Brad's performance in the final tribal council, but I thought that Sarah played a very, very good game during that season and did very well. And so I was very impressed with her. I do like her in that group of the people to go far. I think she and Sophie will probably go far. Sophie, because she kind of flies under the radar a little bit. But Sarah, I think Sarah builds pretty strong relationships with people. And so I think she'll probably do pretty well. I don't know. We'll see how things, you know, if they shake up the tribes again or when the merge happens, but, you know, they're sort of painting that group to kind of be a solid group kind of going forward.
Mm-hmm. Candace, did you have a favorite? Was it Sarah?
Well, okay. So that's a tough question because are we talking about a favorite as a fan?
However you define it.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's complicated because I have people who I love to watch on the show who, you know, are super entertaining to me, like Tyson, and Rob and Sandra. But, you know, then there's other people that I think are, you know, just really good game players. And I think a lot of the really good game players are ones that maybe don't get that much airtime because their game is so under the radar and they're doing, you know, they're doing a lot of amazing things. I do love Sarah. I think she's wonderful. I love her hustle. I love her, her spirit, but I think Sophie's under the radar. I think she's a brilliant player. And I think I can see a lot of the way she plays, because I think I have a little bit of a similar gameplay. As far as a fan, I love to see Ben because I love to see him doing like the doofy stuff that he does and, you know, smacking my head and saying like, why are you doing that? So it's complex. It's a great season because I love everybody for different reasons.
Kyle Picard wants to know, what other winners that Candace has played with did she hope to see on this season? Tom Westman, JT, Tina, Aris.
I would like to never see JT again. So that's an easy one. Tina, no, she wrote my name down and she was kind of rude on, Blood versus Water. Mm-hmm. She kind of snubbed me.
Yeah.
I heard that she had gotten some info from Colby that I was not a good person or something. I don't know, something like that. Who knows? Which kind of burned me because Colby was a doofus. He was Superman in a fat suit or whatever James said. He was a dud. Because he was my, you know, he was everybody's hero coming in. And it was just like, and then he laid on the beach and did nothing. He was completely useless and couldn't do anything in a challenge. And he wouldn't play with anybody. He was just socially isolating. I mean, he was born for COVID-19.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
What about Aris?
I like Aris. I really wish that I had gotten to play with him because he's a cool guy. He's very smart. And I think he's a flexible player.
He's a yoga teacher. In another life. Yeah. In another life he was.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But I don't want to talk about the Vasconcelos brothers doing yoga on Survivor.
Okay.
Because that was awkward. Not Aris. It was not ours.
Yeah. All right. Then let's see.
Did I say his last name right?
Bushkowskis, I believe.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
I think that's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Melanie wants to know, do you think that a person from the edge has a chance to win this season, or will we see the jury default to a never edger? Now, John, you laid out the case why Chris Underwood won the last time out, but do you think that there will be a backlash to that? Will this group of people say, hey, we didn't like that, we're not going to vote for somebody who went to the edge of extinction?
I think people are going to take it one game at a time. You know, I'm not an always or never kind of guy. But I think I do feel that, you know, in the words of Boston Rob, if you win, you win, you know, for whatever reason,
you're the winner.
Yeah. You're going to win. I mean, it's a very Boston Rob thing to say, but you know, for whatever reason, you know, Chris did a lot of good things and he got an edit, but you know, the person everyone thought that he was going against to win was Devins, and Devins also came back from the edge of extinction. So it's not like, you know, I mean, there are two edge of extinction people who are competing against each other to win the game. So and maybe a little bit of backlash from that. It's definitely going to come up. But I don't know. I would, if I had to put money on it, I would bet that a person who did not go to the edge of extinction, I would bet that If the person wins, they went to the edge, it's the person who came back at the merge, not the person that comes back at the final six. I don't think they'll do that.
Okay.
I think they're just going to not let that happen again, or they're going to, you know, I think the jury is going to be too savvy and people are going to be too smart to let that happen, especially given the history of how that happened. I would bet that yes, the person coming back at the merge may have a chance. But I would be shocked if this jury gives the victory to a person who basically was out on the edge of extinction for, you know, the entire season.
Candace, we haven't really talked at all about Parvati and Wendell, where it seems like that they were butting heads a little bit here in this episode. That as our Parvati expert here on the panel, that what do you think is going on there? Why can't these two people get along?
I think they're both. I think they're both kind of stuck in wanting to have some power over the other one. Neither one of them wanted to give in or give up. And, you know, I was a little bit disappointed because I was hoping for a live tribal when Wendell made the offer to let's play and let's do something. And I'm surprised Parvati wouldn't take him up on just saying a name. I mean, why did she need him to say a name? If it's clear that you've got the three boys versus the two girls and Parvati's the biggest threat, you're going home if you don't play an idol or play with him and make something happen. I mean, it should have been a Hail Mary at that point. Do anything, anybody but me.
I think he wanted to make her put her neck out there so he could, like, he did have the power. So there's no reason for him to give up that power and give her an edge. I mean, it's just, you know, he didn't want to show his hand too early. And so if Parvati were to say something that he felt like he were to immediately think was a better play for him, then he would have done that. But, you know, there's no need for him to give up his seat of power to help a person who is in a non-powerful position. So I guess he's received a bunch of hate, mm-hmm. you know, how he handled it, which to be honest, if I were in his position, like, I thought he handled it very well. Like, he didn't just, you know, he stuck to his guns and he knew what they wanted to do. Parvati's a very big threat, you know, because she's played the game so many times, like, she's been in so many situations. She knows how to wriggle herself out of a difficult situation. She's very well liked. And, you know, for Wendell to say, hey, like, understanding, I mean, what was the, you know, they talk about like having insight and an understanding of your position in the game. Like, you know, in that position, he had the power hand. So there's really no reason why he had to give that up just to save Parvati. He didn't really want to save Parvati. So he wanted her to show her hand first. And she didn't. So there's no reason for him to do anything different than what he was going to do.
Yeah, I think he made the exact right play. He played it perfectly. I think the only reason people are having any backlash about it is because they're fans of Parvati and they didn't want to see him go out, but there's nothing against him. I mean, there should not be anything against him because he made the exact right play and what he should have done. It was very smart. You know, it's just people who are sad that are upset to see Parvati go.
Yeah. And to those people that are giving Wendell hate on social media, get a life. Get a life, sure. People.
And you know what? You know who understands that better than anybody else? Parvati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to for Wendell, it seems like that I got to think that he really wanted those fire tokens from Parvati, right? I feel like that felt like, okay, Michelle was probably going to get them. Do you feel like that was his motivation to try to string Parvati along, was to try to steal the fire tokens away from Michelle possibly getting them? This was like a loved one had like an inheritance and he was trying to like get in line ahead of or at least try to like get his way in to make sure that they didn't all go to Michelle after they had, you know, a disappointing end to their relationship.
I think that's really the only reason I can see for Wendell to have ever even opened up that proposition to Parvati at tribal council, because he was solid with his three guys and no need for him to ever open the door to Parvati. I feel like it's a good point that you make. That's got to be the only reason that he even made a move with, you know, opened any door to her, was to get those tokens.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys have any thoughts on the Wendell Michelle relationship that's played out over these last 2 weeks?
It's just awkward.
I mean, I do. I feel for them. It's you know, we talk about having somebody out there that you know. So it's one thing to be out there with somebody you've connected with socially a few times at a couple poker tournaments, to somebody that you've dated and then potentially have to work with. And then, like, there's just so many more emotional, you know. And
air your dirty laundry.
Yeah. Like, it's all, you know, it's everything. There's so many more emotions tied up in every decision, and everything you do or say, the other person's going to be like, oh, you're always that way. Like, because they actually know that about you. Whereas, and they also, to the other point, they know how to, like, push your buttons, you know, maybe to help make you do things. And that makes someone uncomfortable, I would think. So, you know, the one thing, if they were like currently in a relationship, but to have your ex out there, I mean, that'd be an awkward situation. So I sort of, I feel for them both. I would not want to be in that situation. It is super awkward.
Okay. Jack Brinkley says, who currently on the edge of extinction do you think has the best chance of coming back and having success in the latter half of the game?
I would say Natalie or Tyson right now.
Okay.
You know, I think Natalie has a great story on the edge of extinction, but being the first person voted out and not having any connections with the people on the tribe, on the act that are still on the show, I feel like as a viewer, she looks good. But I think from the perspective of the players, I don't really think that that, you know, I don't think that would work now.
Well, it depends on how the merge shakes out. So, I mean, if you can come back as a completely free agent and you go to an even merge and it truly is 6-6 or whatever, she could be in a very powerful position, and that could help her out. But the problem is, no matter what, I mean, no matter which alliance she goes to, she's in the very bottom of that alliance.
Can you see Reem coming back winning?
Maybe.
Are you guys friends with Reem? I feel like that you're like in the same part of the country, right?
No, where is she from?
No, I mean, I like Reem. I would love to be friends with Reem, but no.
I feel like she's not too far from you guys. And, you know, it's so funny because when I was talking to her a couple of weeks ago, that she also had a stink bug at her house.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible.
Where does she live?
You might be neighbors. I don't know. We're going to put you in touch. She's the best. I love Reem. All right, Candace, I have to ask you a tough question. I have to ask you a hard question. Okay. So last night, we saw two of the legends of the game get voted out. We saw in one episode, Parvati and Sandra get voted out at these tribal councils. You've played with both of them. You had a chance once upon a time to vote for one of them to win the game. But Sandra has come back and played two times since then. Parvati's come back and played once. Can you tell us who is the better player, Sandra or Parvati?
Why are you doing this to me? I don't want to say this.
You've seen them both up close.
I know my answer. But I know it's going to hurt Sandra. I love Sandra.
Well, now everyone knows your answer.
Yes. So you say Parvati. And is it that, well, tell me why. Tell me what is it about Parvati?
She's just so dynamic and so wiggly. You cannot get her under your thumb. She's just gonna find a way to get out of whatever it is that she's in, to find a crack, to split, and to gain your trust or to gain an advantage. I just think her play is brilliant. You can't put your finger on it, what it is, how she does it. But she's just charming and brilliant and athletic. She's good at the challenges. She's good socially. She's, I just think she's amazing. That's not to take anything away from Sandra, because Sandra's great too. You know, the Anything But Me and, you know, making it to the end. I mean,
Sandra sort of capitalized on not, you know, being a threat, but like running things behind the scenes and stirring up chaos and then pinning out other people. And it's a really interesting way to play. But Parvati is a very, I mean, again, I've met both of them and everything. And having watched them play, I think that Parvati's, if you want to say their social game is the same, I personally think that Parvati's social game is going to be a little bit better, but they both have very excellent social games. But Parvati has this added dynamic that at any given point, you can win multiple immunity challenges in a row where you don't really have that with Sandra. So if you're looking at the overall like player of the game, like playing all facets of the game, I feel like you have to give it to Parvati.
Yeah, I can definitely see that because there's a whole, like, if in terms of the, you know, the three aspects of the game, the strategic and the social and the just the physical competitions, if you want to say, you know, like even like say it's a split, it's just it's so lopsided in Parvati's favor in terms of the physical being able to win challenges. And that also becomes a reason to get rid of Parvati. But just in terms of like what they're capable of, you know, Parvati has a whole different like element to her game that Sandra doesn't have.
Right.
Okay. But Sandra's won twice.
And Candace is part of the reason for that, right?
I just feel like I don't want to say anything else because I'm already in trouble. And I will make literally one.
We're splitting hairs. We're splitting hairs here.
I feel really guilty because I know Sandra's going to be hurt.
Okay. All right. Then let's see. This is a question from Randy Newpel wants to know, can Candace give us a little more behind the scenes of Yule and Parvati from Cook Islands? Is there any other good like Yule or Parvati stories that you could tell us?
No, I think I pretty much... said most of it. I mean, Parvati had a major flirtatious relationship with Nate.
Yes.
Which I don't know how much of it was on air. I think
a good amount.
Okay. And I think they remained close friends afterwards. I don't really know. I mean, I think she had a decent flirtation with Ozzy as well. But I mean, I don't think any of that's a surprise. And then for Yule, I mean, he's a straight and narrow guy. There's not much to say. No, I think I said it all.
Yeah. Okay. And Yule, has he aged since Cook Islands?
No. I think he's skinnier though.
Yes.
I think he's kids, so he doesn't work out as much. That's got to be the only difference.
Jessica Frey wants to know, what advice do you guys have for Rob and Amber living on the edge together as you guys experienced Redemption Island together?
No comment.
No comment. Okay.
Yeah, they have a lot more people around than we did. We had to spend a very little bit of time sharing Redemption Island with other people. We got to have, you know, 3 days just for ourselves, and that was kind of cool. But like on the edge, like Rob and Andrew are there, but there's like, you know, four other people. I don't know how many people are out there right now. Four, not five. Other people that are out there aside from them. So
okay. Then I have one last question that I want to ask from the listeners. From Felipe Shimon wants to know, would Dr. John eat paper for a fire token?
One fire token?
Yes. Ooh. Yes. Just to give the backstory, this was famously John's great phobia. That he's not afraid of anything else but eating paper.
It's just,
no, he would not. That is not
good. I gotta be honest. I mean,
fire tokens, weak stomach.
Yeah, fire tokens are really, you know, important for the game, but man, you know, there's all the crazy things that Jeff could open up. Like, little does he know that he could open up all these crazy, like pollute and all these like weird things that people eat. I would eat all those things. If he pulled it up and it was like a tiny little piece of paper, I just had to bow out of the challenge. I couldn't do it.
Did you ever have to eat paper before?
No, it's this, there's this one weird thing. There was this kid when I was in elementary school that would like eat these little paper pieces in front of me. And I thought it was so disgusting. And then he had them like all made up like little balls and like those little Lifesavers holes containers. And he would just like pop them in his mouth as snacks and these little paper balls.
And did he get sick? Was he okay?
Well, I mean, mentally, he's obviously sick. And there's no way I've never done anything like that. So I've never heard from him again because I don't ever want to, hear from him again because I never want to do that. But there was just that weird thing. So I had this like mental aversion to it. And then, you know, you're like eating an ice cream cone and you're like chewing the cone and all of a sudden you eat the piece of paper.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that could happen.
Thing. Like I just came and I was this weird thing. I don't know why, but no, I've never been forced to eat paper. But in Survivor, if I had to eat paper for an immunity challenge or for a fire token, I would, I'd have to think hard about passing on.
You have to sit out of that challenge.
Yeah. I would take the Sandra throne, sit out bench over there. If someone's like, you've got to eat paper.
Sit on the Sandra bench.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Anything else you guys want to say about the season?
I wasn't ready for the season as far as like the emotional toll every time somebody put it out, even people that I'm not like emotionally connected to. It was hard seeing Ethan. Like, I've never met Ethan. Like it was hard. Like I really liked him on this season. And like, you know, Candace always talked about, you know, Survivor Africa and everything. And I've heard a lot about him over the years and everything. I just don't never, it was hard to watch him get voted out. Like I really liked him and everything. And to see Amber get voted out, knowing what she gave up to come out there and everybody, even Natalie, I was like, I liked her. I wanted to see her do more. And every person that gets voted out, I'm like, ugh, like that's all we're going to see of them potentially. Like, I'm not ready for every time somebody gets voted. I wasn't ready for Parvati to get voted out. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a great move, but it's just like, ugh, you know, you just, everybody has so much potential in this whole season. And it's been very difficult for me to watch.
I have to agree with John. Like he said, it's been an emotional ride watching your heroes or the people that your heroes and your villains that you've loved to watch, you know, over the past 20 years, you're hoping to see them play. And even though you love the people that are still there, you're mad at them for voting out the people that you love. So it's been sad for me almost every week.
It's just interesting to like go through the emotions of like, I love Denise's move. I love Denise as a player. I thought what she did was fantastic. I could not have been more impressed with that. And like how she put that situation together to absolutely work in her favor. And the number one play that she could do she's never going to say she's sorry for doing it is voting out Sandra. But like, I would have liked to see more of Sandra this season, you know, and see what she does is, you know, at the merge and play her games and stuff. I've always loved watching Sandra and she's a great player. So it's just tough.
Right. I think the sadness of seeing people that you love and want to see play go keeps you from being able to fully celebrate the brilliant moves of the people who are making those moves and booting those people out.
Yeah.
I do.
It's a war of attrition.
Yeah. And I hate the strong word, but I do use it, I think, correctly here. I hated the idea of Edge of Extinction. I really did not love that twist. I didn't love it. I mean, I enjoyed the season, but I didn't love how it ended up playing out. And, it's just so different. It's just a completely different game, jury management and everything. I do think that in this season, it sort of buffers that disappointment because the people don't go away entirely. Yeah, you can still see Tyson eating his peanut butter and get that viewership. So it's like he's not gone forever. He's gone for now, and maybe he can come back. But you still get to see them. You see that thing. You know, you see that story about Ethan, you know, struggling doing that challenge and stuff. And you still get to see the players. And so, from a fan standpoint, about seeing all the players, I think the Edge has been more of a pleasant surprise this season. Just because of being able to see everybody a second time after they get voted out. But I'm still concerned about how it's going to affect the gameplay. But it has buffered that disappointment somewhat.
All right. Well, first off, let me say thank you guys so much for, talking about all of the fun stuff going on in the world tonight with everything going on with Survivor. Again, if people wanted to check out the podcast we did about the coronavirus with Dr. Mike, lots of great Q&A from that podcast. That's up in our podcast feed and on our YouTube channel. And then also all week long, Candace and Dr. Mike and I'm not sure, John, have you jumped in on Twitter also answering any questions from the listeners?
I've been trying to, but I can't type as fast as Candace.
Yes. No, Candace is like a machine on Twitter answering so many questions that people have about the coronavirus and then what should they be doing? What can they be doing? How do they stay safe? Follow at Candace Cody MD because Candace has been a really great resource for people online. I know that I appreciate it. I'm sure many, many people appreciate it as well.
Well, good. And I really do feel like this, this is our time to serve when people need us and people have questions and they need them answered. That's the least I can do.
Yeah. Of course, you could follow John Cody as well at JP Cody MD as well. And I really appreciate you guys making some time to talk about all this stuff tonight.
Well, thanks for having us, Rob. We always love to come and be part of your podcast.
Yeah, it's always fun. Do you guys have anything else that you want to add about anything?
I think that these are crazy times, and I'm really glad that I hope a lot of people tune in and listen to this and had a chance to check out and disconnect from what's going on and just talk about something that we love and everybody that subscribes to this podcast loves and talk about Survivor and disagree with us or agree with us. We love to hear your opinions and, hopefully you were able to, again, disconnect and have some fun for a couple hours.
Okay, great. Guys, thank you both so much.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. It's always a pleasure.
Everybody, there you have it. The great John and Candace Cody back here on the podcast. We got a lot still coming up this weekend on the podcast. Going to talk with Trish Hegarty. Going to talk with her about Tony and Sarah and everything going on here in Survivor Winners at War. Get your feedback questions in. Plus, we're going to have some podcast coverage, maybe some bonus coverage this weekend, maybe if it comes together. And then also, we're going to have Amon Adwin on this week in Survivor with the great Jordan Kalish, not to mention the Wiggle Room with this week's jam-packed wand off with songs about Parvati and Sandra and Denise's move and everything else you guys are going to come up with for the wand off. And of course, if you're looking for a place where you want to connect with other Survivor fans right now, talk about everything that's going on in Survivor. We have a lot of great discussions going on about what people are experiencing right now. You want to come on over and be a part of our patron community, head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Of course, you get access to all of the extra content that we have right now with our Survivor pregame show, Facebook Friday. I'll be on for a couple hours taking calls with people, the patron 5 for 5 as well. So that's all at robhasawebsite.com/patron. If you're looking for ways to get more involved with our Rob as a Podcast patron community right now. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you're doing good wherever you are. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.